Hi, and welcome to another edition of Interviews with the Hunting Masters. I'm your host, John Stallone, and we are going to talk to a buddy of mine. He works for a publication I'm sure you guys have maybe heard of. It's Peterson's Bow Hunting. He's the editor and of the Bow Hunting magazine, and it's Christian Berg. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing really well, John. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, absolutely, man. So what do you got going on today other than chit-chatting with me?
Well, today's a glamorous life in at the Peterson's Bow Hunting office, because tomorrow I'm leaving for Florida. So nice. I'm not in the rest of the week. Getting on a plane tomorrow morning. I'm heading down actually to hunt with several different manufacturers down there. We're going to chase some pigs the rest of the week. And actually, it's kind of a cool day because I thought I'd show you, like, okay, today in the mail, you never know what's going to show up. I got a new Vapor Trail rest. So
there you go.
got myself a new drop away rest. So I got to get that set up on one of my bows. And what else showed up today? I got a dozen Beeman Whiteout arrows. So these things are pretty cool. It's got like the black and it's like a white and gray scale real treat pattern on them. But I like those white arrows because they're going to be really easy to see, like when you're out in the yard, even just target shooting. I don't know about you. I like to practice, you know, from the longer ranges for the most part, because after a while, you know, standing at 20 and 30, you're just pounding them in there. And but when I'm like 40, 50 yards, I'm getting old and I can't hardly see my, I have to walk. I ought to be wearing glasses or something, but I can't see them. So I'm hoping I'll be able to see those. So yeah, I mean, things are going well, man. I got a couple, got a little swag in the mail today. I'm getting ready to go on a hunt. So it's all good, man. It's all good. And, we're having a good year here at Peterson's Bow Hunting.
Yeah. Fringe benefits, man.
Fringe. That's why we do it. I knew when I got this job, if getting rich was the goal, this wasn't the gig. Yeah.
But hunting is not it.
If living the lifestyle was the goal, it was a good career move. So
yeah,
it's coming up on 9 years, John, this fall here at the magazine. So it's been a fun ride so far.
You've been in the business though, not necessarily at the mag. You've been actually not necessarily in the hunting industry, but you've been doing journalism for what, like 14, 15 years now, or more than
probably
that?
A little longer than that. I'm getting old. I'm 43. I've probably been out of college for 22 years now. I got a journalism degree. I'm one of those rare people who actually got a degree and then has had a full career in my chosen field to study. So yeah, I started out as a newspaper guy and I worked for several different newspapers up in Rhode Island, where I'm from originally, and then here in Pennsylvania. My last 11 years before I came to the magazine here, I was at the Morning Call in Allentown, Pennsylvania, did several different things. I actually come from a hard news background. I used to be the guy to be like, you know, talking to the firefighters if the house across the street was burning down, or if somebody murdered somebody in your neighborhood, I'd be the guy standing at the police tape waiting to interview the detectives. So I've done all that kind of stuff. I've been to too many school board meetings, which are super boring, but eventually transferred over into the sports department at the Morning Call. And I started to do outdoor hunting, fishing, conservation related stuff there. My last 6 years full time, covering the outdoors beat for the newspaper. And during that period, I started to do some freelancing for various outdoor magazines, including Bow Hunter, which is a sister publication of Peterson's Bow Hunting. A lot of people may not realize that Bow Hunter and Peterson's Bow Hunting are owned by the same parent company.
Right,
so
right.
That's where I got to know my boss, the publisher, and kind of got my foot in the door here. So yeah, you never know where life is gonna lead you. I actually thought that I was going to be like the next great investigative reporter and unearth all sorts of political corruption and things like that. And I did, to some degree, have some opportunities to do that sort of thing. But eventually, as I got more and more into bow hunting, that didn't appeal to me so much. I just wanted to figure out a way where I could collect a paycheck to go try and shoot something.
There you go. That's what we're all trying to do. Well, very cool. Well, how did you get into hunting itself, actually?
Oh, my gosh. This is a long story. Do you have time? What's the format?
You know what, man? I don't have a format.
Well, it's a good story.
I have podcasts that are 20 minutes long. I have some that are an hour and 40 hour, 2 hours long.
No, we're not going 2 hours, but I will tell you the story. It's a heck of a story. If you want to hear how I became,
I want to hear it.
Cause believe it or not, and this will be rare for people in the industry. Okay. To this day, my father, he's never hunted a day in his life. Don't have an uncle, a grandparent, anybody mm-hmm. in my family that I know who hunts. I had an uncle who fished growing up. And actually as a kid, I always fished ever since, you know, I was the kid on the bike, you know, me and my buddies would be fishing at the local ponds and stuff like that. And I always liked the outdoors. I liked to hike and camp, but I never hunted. Growing up in Rhode Island, you're from New York State, right, John?
Yeah.
You know what it's like. I mean, if you grew up in a suburban area, I didn't really know anybody who hunted, and it wasn't the thing. In southern New England, it's pretty much urban and suburban area. I mean, hunting wasn't like the thing like it is here in Pennsylvania. So actually, it wasn't until I came to college down here in Pennsylvania that I started to make friends with guys who were deer hunters. Mm-hmm. But even at that time during college, I just knew that they liked hunting and they would go home, you know, for opening day and that sort of thing. But I still didn't hunt. So it was actually right after, shortly after college, about a year and a half after college, I had gone back home to Rhode Island and worked for a newspaper up in Providence, ended up moving back down here to Pennsylvania. My wife and I, my now wife, my then fiance, we were engaged. We were trying to figure out, you know, where we were going to settle after we got married. She was finishing up school. So I moved down to Bucks County, Pennsylvania. And I was working for a newspaper there, and I actually got involved through a church. I got into like a college and career age group at a church that I was going to there in Bucks County, Pennsylvania. And there were some guys in this church group, two guys in particular, and I'm going to call them out in case they watch the podcast, because these guys, you know, would have never known that they had a transformative impact on my life and led me to be the editor of Peterson's Bowhunting Magazine one day. Okay. Mark Nace and Mike Flack. And every Wednesday night, this group would meet, and we always had a dinner before the program. So we'd have this meal together every Wednesday night, and during the dinner, the only thing, and I mean the only thing that Mike and Mark would talk about were their hunting adventures. And so, you know, if it was archery season, it was all about the bow hunts. If it was gun season, it was the rifle hunts. And they would just go on and on. And I mean, we know now, right, how much passion that we have for the hunt and how excited they would get. Turkey season, I'd hear about their turkey hunts. And this went on through the spring and then into the fall maybe of that first year. And I thought to myself, you know what? These guys are so fired up about hunting. Maybe there's really something to this hunting thing.
Right.
But at this time, I'm going to say I'm 23 years old. Okay. I could be off by a year, but I've never hunted in my life. I don't own a gun or a bow. I've never had a hunting license. I never even took the hunter safety class. Okay. So I decide I'm going to go hunting. So I sign up for the hunter safety class in Pennsylvania at a local rod and gun club. And you know exactly, I show up for this thing on like a Saturday morning, and there's a bunch of 11, 12-year-old kids and their dads, and then there's me, the 23-year-old dude all by himself. So, you know, you go through the hunter safety class. I get my certification. Now I can buy a hunting license. So I get a hunting license. Now, great. I got a hunting license. I want to go deer hunting. I don't have a weapon, okay? Bucks County, Pennsylvania is a shotgun-only area. Uh-huh. So I needed a shotgun, slugs. I didn't want to go out and buy a shotgun. I mean, I don't really know if I'm even going to like hunting. I mean, I don't want to spend a couple hundred dollars on a gun. So I was renting a little cottage in the woods at that time from a guy named Ron Miller. And I said, Ron, I know that you've got an old Winchester Model 12. And I want to try this deer hunting thing. And I really don't want to go out and buy a gun. Would it be all right if I borrowed your pump action shotgun? So he loans me his Model 12. And I go to the local Walmart in Quakertown, Pennsylvania. And I bought two boxes of Federal Premium slugs. And I got I probably made a little bullseye target on a piece of cardboard.
Uh-huh.
And I drove out to the public shooting range at Nockamixon State Park outside Quakertown, Pennsylvania. And I put up my little cardboard target and I This was open sights, just a bead, you know, no optic or anything. And I probably shot from like 50 yards and I, you know, aimed it up there and boom, shot a couple times. By the way, I hate hunting with slugs, by the way.
Especially in a pump.
Long story short, I know I hit the target like at least twice because there was a couple holes in there. And I thought, well, hey, man, like I got close to the middle of the cardboard on a couple shots. I am good to go, man. I got this gun. I got these slugs. I got my license. I'm good. But tell you what I don't have. I still don't have anywhere to go hunting. Okay, I need a spot. Because I'm going by myself. Never hunted before, but I'm going by myself. So being a reporter at that time, one of the communities that I covered outside of Quakertown, Pennsylvania, this rural township called Bedminster Township, a farming community. And one of the township supervisors of Bedminster Township, his name is Eric Schaffhausen. I don't even know if he's still alive. He was a township supervisor at the time. He owned a nice farm in the township. And I thought, Eric's a pretty nice guy. Maybe if I call Eric and I say, hey, I'm going to try deer hunting. Could I hunt at your place? So I call Eric. I explain the situation. I'm like, hey, you know, I'd like to try deer hunting. Don't really know what I'm doing. Don't really have anywhere to go. I know that there's deer out in those fields at your place. Could I maybe try deer hunting at your place? He said, yeah, that would be fine. You know, park over here by the barn and, you know, you can hunt here and there and just go do your thing. He wasn't a hunter himself. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to think, I believe this was 1997. Okay. So it was opening day, probably like November 28th to 30th or something like that. It's always in Pennsylvania. It's always the first Monday after Thanksgiving. It's a national holiday in the state of Pennsylvania. I don't think that makes sense. State holiday, basically. So, you know, and everybody's out. So I drive out there, you know, in the dark, pre-dawn hours of opening day, 1997, and I've got my first ever hunting license. I've got my borrowed gun. I've got my borrowed place to hunt. I've got an orange coat that my future father-in-law, because I was married. We had just gotten married. So my father-in-law had given me an old orange jacket, and I'll tell you what else he gave me. He gave me a Buck 110 folding knife, the classic buck knife, and he gave me a deer drag, okay, one of those straps, you know, that you use to drag the deer out. And it came in a blister pack, okay? And on the back of the cardboard was a diagram with step-by-step instructions of how to gut a deer. And then it had, you know, the plastic. So I had everything I needed. I had my knife and I had my drag and I had my gun and I was set. So I go all by myself. I sit down in this tree line along the field edge. And you know what it's like on the opening day of gun season, right? The sun comes up. And really, even before you think it's probably light enough to safely shoot, you know, there's always that guy within earshot, right? Or guys. Oh, yeah. There's always one or two guys that are popping a deer, like in the gloaming, right? Like, are you sure you can really see what you're shooting at? But, you know, you hear a couple shots. And then, of course, as the sun, you know, continues to come up, you hear, you know, sporadic shooting in the distance. And as is prone to happen on opening day, guys aren't very patient, you know, particularly those guys that are just out there one or two days a year, and it's not long. See, this farm backs up to the state park, so his property borders the public ground.
Okay.
And it's not very long at all before I start to see a little bit of orange over here, and then I'm looking in the woods over here, and it's a little bit of orange, and then over here there's a little bit of orange, and then there's a guy walking around over here. And see, my plan was good because I knew that the deer liked to come out of the forest there on the state parkland and come into his fields to eat. But I didn't realize there were going to be so many guys there, and I just got frustrated, and I said to myself, this is the stupidest thing in the world. There's no way that a deer is ever going to be able to get from over there in the woods and run that gauntlet of other hunters to get out here to where I'm sitting. So I'm just going to go home. I mean, I don't know about this hunting thing, but it seems pretty dumb to me. So I get up. My truck's parked over here by the barn, and I said, I will just walk the perimeter of the farm, and I'll walk around the farm, and if I get back to the truck and I don't see anything, hey, I'm done. You know, hunting, maybe it's not for me. So I walk down, you know, this side. I get to the back edge of the farm. walk along there, the border between his property and the state land, and I come up the third side of the rectangle, and I take the last turn on the home stretch that's going to bring me back to the barn. And the tree line on that side of the field doesn't even go the whole way to the barn. It just goes for a short distance. There's a little brushy fence row there with some trees, and it's only about 20 yards wide. It separates a field that's out along the road from the back fields where I was hunting. And as I'm walking along, I literally get to the last 20 yards or so of cover, and I look over to the right, and there in the brush stands a small buck. And at that, and I'm like, I look at this buck and I just freeze, and the buck looks at me and it just freezes. And he's probably thinking, I had the perfect little hiding spot here this morning. Nobody was going to bother me here. And I don't really know who's more surprised, okay, me or him. I know we're both pretty surprised because, like, he's like a deer in the headlights and I'm like a deer in the headlights. And I don't know how much time is going by, but I think we're both literally probably standing there 10, 15 seconds just looking at each other, not sure, you know, what to do. And finally it comes to me. I'm like, dude, shoot the thing, you know, shoot the thing. So I bring the shotgun up to my shoulder and line up the little bead on the chest, and I put my finger down on the trigger and I squeeze, and I'm squeezing and I'm squeezing, and John, nothing happens. Nothing happens. And I'm like, what in the world is going on? And then it hit me.
Safety.
You got to take off the safety if you want the gun to go off. I'm like, oh my gosh, you idiot. So, and the whole time, the deer is just standing there looking at me.
It was a gift.
So I reach down and I flip off the safety and I bring the gun back up to my shoulder and I take my aim. And this time when I squeeze the trigger and the gun goes boom, that deer goes poof and hits the bricks. Okay. Hits the bricks literally down in his tracks. And at that moment, a kid from Southern New England who'd never hunted before in his life got the worst case of the shakes and the adrenaline rush that you can ever imagine. And that's when I knew, okay, there is something to this hunting thing, and right. It's pretty damn cool. Okay. It's pretty damn cool.
Hooked for life.
And it gets funnier. So I walk over to the deer. It's laying there dead, obviously. And I'm looking at the deer. And I'm examining this animal from the shoulder to the ass, wondering where the hell I hit this thing, because there's not a scratch on it. Not a scratch. And I walk around to the front, and I see that there's gray matter oozing out of the skull. So my aim, which was right on the chest of the deer, somehow I managed at a range of about 35 or so yards, maybe 40 yards, to miss by about 18 to 20 inches. And when I was trying to shoot that thing through the chest, I put a 12-gauge slug right through the skull.
Oh, my God.
You want to talk about a gift. And I truly mean that. And I told you it was a long story. But here's the thing, okay? So there I am, literally, you know, first time ever deer hunting, having killed this deer, getting out that buck knife that my father-in-law had given me, and literally using the printed diagram and the step-by-step instructions to field dress that deer. And
nice.
That little buck had like a one antler with like a little fork. It was like a little 2-point buck.
Right.
And you know, not honestly, probably not that different from the first buck that millions of Pennsylvania hunters have killed over the years.
Millions of hunters every year shoot.
But yeah. You know, and this was in the days before antler restrictions. But truly, and you know, I don't want to get too spiritual or preachy on you here, but truly, I often think back to that morning and wonder, what would my life had have been if I got back to the truck and didn't see that deer? Because it's highly likely that I would have got back to my truck, driven home. I would have said, Ron, thank you for letting me borrow the gun. Here's your shotgun. Mr. Schaffhausen, thank you so much for the generous, you know, allowance of me to hunt on your property. Right. And I would have gone back to that church group and said, hey guys, I tried that hunting thing. That's not that cool. Not for me. And I don't know what I'd be doing today. I honestly don't know what I'd be doing. So crazy. That's the answer to the story of how I got started in hunting. And so from there, it was literally like within a year I hunted, you know, I hunted maybe one more season with the shotgun, and then went into an archery shop in Allentown, Pennsylvania called Archery at the Glen, met a guy who's to this day still one of my best friends, Brian Glenn, sold me my first bow. Got into bow hunting, got into that heavy ever since, you know, got myself a bird dog, started doing some waterfowling, retriever training, upland bird hunting. I mean, I just kind of like dove crazy into this whole thing, you know, whole hog, because, once I got into it, I actually really regretted the fact that I missed all those years between like 12 and 23. And when I see, even like I've had the pleasure of introducing my own kids, and they've both killed deer now, and they're 13 and 11, and they've wow. already killed deer, and they've been on trips with me and things like that. And I'm like, man, I'll never get those years back, you know, and it would have been so precious to me to have been able to hunt, you know, when I was that small.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's a cool story, man. I mean, it's crazy how many, you know, if you think in your life, how many things would be different if you just made it. It makes me think of those books when we were kids, because we're about the same age. Those choose your own adventure. Absolutely. You know, you make one different decision, you know, like you said, you get back to the truck, who knows? You might have been the editor for Ice Skating Magazine. I don't know. It's just, it's different. It's, everything's crazy. Wow, that's a good story, man. Well, that's all we got time for today, folks. But
well, it was a pleasure being with you, man.
I'm just messing around. So we got some questions for you. So since then, you've become quite the whitetail hunter. You've had a lot of experience going around, going to Midwest, hunting all over the East Coast. It's afforded you a lot of opportunity to learn some things. So I got you on today. We're going to talk a little bit about whitetail hunting, especially back east, because it's a different ball game. I mean, you can section off the country in several different, you know, several different sections, and where, depending on the section that you're in and the type of whitetail you're hunting, it completely changes your tactics and how the deer act and so on and so forth. So, and that's one of the reasons why I love hunting whitetail, because they're just, you could go anywhere in the country and it's like a whole new experience. So, so that being said, you've hunted the East, you've hunted the West, you've hunted the South. Tell me some differences and you know, set this, basically give us like, your take on whitetail as a whole, and then we'll kind of lead into some of these other questions.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of a philosophical thing for me in a lot of ways, John, because as somebody who started, you know, hunting here in Pennsylvania and still considers, you know, I'm still an Eastern whitetail hunter, and I always will be. And so, you know, if I take the computer here and I flip this up and I, you know, okay, sorry, there's 158 inch deer from Missouri. That was the first really big whitetail that I ever killed. You know, and like over here, I've got caribou on the wall, and, you know, you can see the turkey fans back there. And I've been to New Zealand and I've been able to kill red stag, and I've been out to Colorado and killed, you know, 300 inch bull elk, and I've killed mule deer in Montana and, you know, all this stuff. But at the end of the day, I still get, I think, more pleasure over chasing whitetails just around my house back in Pennsylvania than I do of anything else. And it's so different, you know, it's so different. One thing, you know, you ever sit with your buddies and like watch the Outdoor Channel and like, you know, it's another episode of somebody out in Iowa or Kansas or Illinois, and you know, they're pat. No, we got to let him go. He's only 4.5, he's only 4.5. He's only 3.5, and you know, that's not one on our hit list. And you look at your buddy, right? And you're like, dude, if we lived out there, we'd kill a 140 every year, right? We'd kill a 140 every year. Well, I'm kind of here to validate myself and everybody who's ever done that to basically say, I agree with you. If you're a hard hunter, if you're a hardcore bow hunter who puts your time in and you're not hunting with bad habits and being sloppy, you're right. I think you would. I think you would. If I lived in Illinois, I truly believe that I would kill a 140 every year, or certainly 8 years out of 10, you know? And I think that most good bow hunters who are putting in the effort that's required would do the same thing, because it's a totally different game. And I can say that because I hunt here and I hunt there. And the little line that I like to use is, and I tell this to all my friends, I'm like, you know, I'm a lot smarter of a deer hunter in Iowa than I am in Pennsylvania. And I don't think that's because my IQ jumps a whole bunch of points when I cross the state line. Do you know what I mean?
No, because it's a different ball game.
It's a totally different ball game. It's a totally different ball game. The deer, I mean, honestly, the place where I go in Illinois, and I love it, but the deer, like,
they tolerate
so much more.
There's a lot more big bucks out there too. That's the other thing.
There's more big bucks and there's way less pressure. If you have the right setup, you know. And Texas, I mean, you talk about the South. Texas is so funny.
Texas not even home.
My friends and I joke.
I
know there's
go
probably
there to get out.
I love to go there and shoot stuff and see stuff. You're always hunting around a feeder. Even if you're not on a feeder, you're probably close to a feeder, because that's, folks, if you've never hunted Texas, I'm not trying to justify anything to you. I'm not asking you permission or forgiveness. I'm just telling you this is how it's done in Texas. And we joke about those deer because that feeder goes off and they come out and they will look at you in the stand. And you know what they're thinking? You see that guy right there? That's Corn Guy. And we love you, Corn Guy. You would never hurt us. Don't worry about anything. That's Corn Guy. You know, and it's like, okay, that's part of deer hunting too. So you got everything from like a Pennsylvania, New Jersey, New York buck, right? Which, say a 3.5 or 4.5-year-old buck in our part of the world, if he hears an ATV, he's going in underground, okay? If he so much as sniffs your boot print, he's not coming back to that spot for 2 weeks, you know? And then you go to some of these other parts of the country, and it's like, oh, no, that's Bubba. He'll be out at 3:15, you know? And sure enough, there's Bubba coming out at 3:15 down the same trail every day. And it's not always like that. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it's, you know, some of the things I'm saying are a bit over-exaggerated, but there's a lot of truth to the fact that it's different, depending on where you are.
Yeah. And I think, honestly, and it's funny because I bet if you ask anybody and you go to any part of the country, they'll say hunting their deer is the hardest, you know? So it's kind
of,
I
have a standing invitation to a lot of the top names in the industry to come hunt with me in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you this, so far, nobody's volunteered to come try and film an episode.
I know. You know what's funny is 30 years ago, PA was like, that was the place to go hunting. That was the place to go deer hunting. We used to leave New York to go to Pennsylvania because the deer herd was giant. I mean, it still is big, but it was the biggest in the country. And I mean, my dad, I never actually shot one in Pennsylvania. And I just realized that I've never killed a deer in Pennsylvania. I'm going to have to chase.
Come out.
You know, and a few times that I went hunting there as a kid, my dad shot a pretty nice buck there, you know, like an 8-point, probably a 110, 115-inch buck. Just good, solid, big body. You know, and back then, that's how we gauged them. We didn't gauge them. It was how many points did they have and how much did they weigh when you brought them in, you know? But, Pennsylvania, I remember it being you know, very much like New York, very high competition with other hunters, hard to get on ground, period. Cause you dealt not nearly as much as New York. Now, I think there's a lot more tree huggers in New York and people who are anti-hunting who don't, you know, they'll own a farm and they don't want anybody on it or whatever. I think it's a little bit less in PA, but very, very recluse deer, very, what's the word I'm looking for? They have zero tolerance, very, very intolerant of human intrusion, and a lot of nocturnal buck movement and stuff like that. You know, yeah, does would be on the on the side of the road when you're driving, but come gun season, even them, they were, because they get hunted. I feel like the Northeast and a lot of the southern south, really, honestly, the whole East Coast is really tough deer hunting. Because even in places like Georgia and like Florida, North Carolina, South Carolina, that you can, you're allowed to bait, even those deer, they're not like baiting in Texas, like you said, where, oh, here, you know, that's Bubba the Corn Man. They approach those bait piles really, really cautiously. They're very, you know, it's
get
a different.
Yeah, I mean, they get conditioned, you know, in the whole East Coast, there's just so many people. You know, I always say, sometimes I joke and I say, you know, Pennsylvania is a beautiful state. It's just, there's too many people. You know what I mean? Like you wish there weren't so many hunters, but on the other hand, the Pennsylvania hunting culture is what really I owe my whole career to. So It's a double-edged sword, you know, and that's why most of the time, if you ask outfitters anywhere else in the country, where the main, you know, is there a state? Usually Pennsylvania is among, you know, if it's not the top, it's one of the top two or three states that funnels clients to hunt outfits around the country, because we've got all these hunters. And I think that for the most part, a lot of our hunters yearn for a higher quality hunting experience. And it's just a numbers game. We have tons of deer in Pennsylvania, but we don't have enough big bucks to serve a million hunters. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You're never going to be able to grow a million 140-inch bucks to, you know, so everybody can't kill a big one every year. And it's gotten a lot better. And it's funny, you mentioned Pennsylvania being the place to go. There's still people who come down, like, you know, up in Maine and New Hampshire and Vermont, where deer densities are quite low. They don't have a lot of agriculture up there, and they get some really big old deer, but just the sheer numbers aren't there. There's still a lot of guys from northern New England who come down to Pennsylvania, and they think this is great deer hunting, you know? So everything's relative to a certain degree, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about deer in your area. Let's talk about core area or a buck's home range. How do you see that being different in the Northeast compared to, say the Midwest, because I think Midwest is probably where everybody gauges their whitetail hunting from, because that's what you get to see on TV.
I mean, I don't know if a whitetail buck's core area is that much different in the Northeast versus the Midwest. But I think that from the hunter's perspective, right, my ability to control and or influence and or hunt a buck's core area is far, far different. And what I mean by that is the amount of ground that I have to work with here in Pennsylvania versus, you know, typically if you're hunting in the Midwest with an outfitter, even a small outfitter is going to probably have at least a couple of thousand acres, right? And if you go even further west, like I like to hunt, one of my favorite places to hunt whitetails is South Dakota. And I go out there every fall. The best. And there's so many deer. But the outfitter that I hunt with out there, he has over 20,000 acres leased. And, you know, a 20,000 acre ranch in South Dakota is considered kind of a small place. Some of those people have 100,000 acres. You know, it's unbelievable. So, and like I said, even in the Midwest, you know, a block, a square mile, right? I mean, that's how everything's gridded out. Like in Kansas, if you have a block, you have 640 acres minimum to hunt on. Well, you know, depending on the individual animal, 640 acres, if you have a buck pattern, I mean, his core area could be well under that. Now, I'm not saying that encompasses the deer's entire home range, where he'll never leave that 640 acres. But, you know, especially a lot of those older bucks, like the ones that Bill Winkie's killing at his place out in Iowa, he gets a lot of those bucks patterned down into sometimes even less than 100 acres, you know. But even 100 acres here in Pennsylvania is kind of considered like a big piece of property, right? So again, everything is relative. Like if I was living, you know, well, I do live here, right? And I own a home. I only have a little over an acre of ground. If I had a 100-acre block of timber here in Pennsylvania, my neighbors would all think I was rich and that I had this giant, vast holding of, you know, hunting paradise. Well, 100 acres of timber isn't enough to hold any deer, you know. Invariably, in any given day, or even half of a day, that buck that you might be trying to kill may be crossing onto two or three or four neighboring properties where you can't influence any control over how much hunting is going on there, the style of hunting that's going on there, or any other activities, whether it be, you know, riding of ATVs or horses or just hiking or whatever. And so you're constantly dealing with other human activities, and probably plays an even greater role than the deer do. Whereas when you go out west, typically if you have a good area, whether it be outfitted or just through a lease or a connection that you have, you can hunt those animals in a relatively undisturbed state, right? So you're using your cameras to pattern, and then you're controlling the access and the hunting pressure and being careful not to disturb the deer, so you can continue to hunt over and over and over again and still rely on those predictable patterns, you know. Whereas in Pennsylvania, you might have a pattern that goes great right up until opening day, but the neighbor who has a tree stand 200 yards away from your tree stand goes in there the first morning and, you know, hunts on a bad wind and spooks that deer, and you don't even know about that. And now you're trying to figure out how come for the whole bow season, now for the next 6 weeks, you never get a picture of that deer. Maybe it's because the neighbor spooked him opening morning. He went up the next ridge and he's not coming back until after the rut, you know, or until the rut. You know what I mean? He might come back in the rut to check on some does, or maybe he'll come back at night. It's, you know, really, really challenging.
So what are some of the things that you're doing to overcome that?
One big thing that I'm learning slowly, it's a hard lesson to learn, is to not compound other people's mistakes by making your own mistakes. It's to resist the temptation to do stupid stuff because you know everyone else is doing stupid stuff. Right. I'll give you an example. The guy who actually owns the farm where I mainly hunt, he's not a real experienced deer hunter. He's got more of a, he's been a rifle hunter for a long time. He's not too into archery, but he's gotten extremely interested in his deer just in about the 5 years that I've been hunting the farm because of my trail camera surveillance. So as I show him, we actually have some really good bucks. Like every year I'll have usually like one 140 and a couple like 120 to 130 bucks, which are great deer for this part of the world. And we get excited about these deer. And he said to me last year, there's a particular ravine on the property where the deer like to bed. And he's like, you got to get right in there on opening day. Got to get into that best stand. I've got a stand in there that's like one of my best stands. He's like, you got to get in there because, you know, Joe from the other property, you know that he's going to be up in there hunting. And I said to him, I was like, Owen, look at all the trail camera pictures. I don't have a single daylight photo of those bucks since, you know, however many weeks ago. What makes you think that just because it's opening day and I climb into that tree stand that any of those bucks are going to come past in daylight? I said, they're not going to. I said, first of all, they don't know that it's opening day. And even if they did, they weren't going to change their pattern just for me. We got to stay out of there, because if I go in, all I'm going to do is leave scent and it's not going to accomplish anything. And yes, the neighbors might hunt. And yes, there's a small chance the neighbors might even kill one of those deer. Again, more than likely, the neighbors are just going to push the deer off of their property because those bucks aren't moving at that time of the day. It's not like you're going to sneak up on one of them. So I've tried to stay disciplined in my hunting in the, you know, in the belief that while I can't always control what everybody else does, or I can rarely control what everybody else does, doing dumb things never makes sense for me, no matter how many dumb things everybody else does. So I try to stay disciplined in that way. And actually this year, I consider this past year, even though I didn't kill a buck, and by the way, I haven't shot a buck in Pennsylvania in probably 6 or more years now. And that's because I won't shoot 2.5-year-olds and 1.5-year-olds. And I'm really started to get into this idea of killing some of these better deer that I'm getting the camera pictures of. I consider this past year really successful because I actually had an encounter with one of them, and I had one in bow range one morning in early November, and it was in another spot, just on the top of a ridge where I saved it. I hadn't hunted there all year, and I went in with my climber one morning, and again, I'm hunting the top of my buddy's property, and there's another property just at the top of the ridge, and I'm hunting just down over the edge. And there's a third property just off to the east, a couple like less than 100 yards, and just to the west is a housing development halfway down the side of the mountain. And there's a bunch of houses over there, and sometimes you can hear people doing yard work or kids playing in the street while you're up there in your stand. So this is what we deal with a little bit, back east, and you guys know this. But I had a hot doe. I was fortunate that morning that a hot doe came off, and she came down off of the neighbor's property, and he was right behind her. I'm thinking this is a good, 135 inch deer, 10 pointer. He's right on her heels, and she comes down over the edge, and she comes and takes a left hand turn, and she's beelining right for my tree. And I'm
Oh,
like,
geez.
oh my gosh, I'm like, I have this. I finally am going to kill one of these great bucks. And I didn't have really any cover in this tree. It was a straight tree that I could get up with my climber. And she got about 12 yards from my tree, and she just stopped and kind of like looked a little bit and just decided something wasn't right. And she kind of buttoned back the way she came and went down the hill about 45 yards out from me. And that buck, at that, as she was checking everything out over there, he was 30 yards broadside, but I had no clear shot. There was brush in between of us. And when he never spooked, and she didn't really spook. She just trotted back over and then went down the hill. And he came and just followed her straight down the hill. And I mean, I was like at full draw, and I was like leaning this way and that way and crouching down and trying to like find any way that I could get a clear arrow through there. I just never had a shot.
Oh,
But,
geez.
to even for me, and here's the thing, okay? And this is what I talked about at the beginning, John, about philosophically. That for me in Pennsylvania, right, is the same thing as killing a 140 inch deer in Illinois. Because in a given week of hunting in Illinois, I kind of expect to have an opportunity at a good buck or two, right? Whereas in Pennsylvania, when that buck got out of sight and the encounter was over, and you've been there, I'm sure, back in New York, I literally told myself, well, dude, that's it. I mean, that was your chance for this year. In all likelihood, that was the one mature buck that you were going to see with your own two eyes, not on a trail camera, while you were in a tree with a bow in your hand. I mean, you might. I mean, you don't give up. I'm not saying you give
No,
up, but
yeah, of
I
course.
mean, the odds are that was your encounter. And if you don't make it happen, good luck trying to find him again. You know what I mean? Because it's not easy at all. So the philosophical side of that is we talk a lot within the hunting community. We've all read articles, or you've seen, people say that there's different stages of hunter, right? Like when you're a new hunter, you just want to shoot. You just want to shoot anything. And then after that, you become like a trophy hunter. And then after that, eventually, you get real. Then when you get real mature, you don't even care about killing stuff anymore. You just want to help like Johnny and your grandkids and your neighbor become. And it's like this maturation process. And I don't want to completely dismiss that, because I've seen some of that in my own hunting life. But on the other hand, I don't think that we can expect a deer hunter in Pennsylvania or North Carolina or Virginia who is going to live his entire hunting life never really seeing the kind of deer that we see in other parts of the country, and expect that that guy is going to climb that ladder and go through all those stages, because the quality of the experience simply isn't the same as what you might have somewhere else. So to expect that we're going to put the values or the, you know, the evaluation of what it means to be mm-hmm. successful to what a trophy is, you know, to say that the standard is the same, you know, in Iowa as it is in Pennsylvania, to me, there's no way. And it's not even for me. You know, when I hunt in Pennsylvania, I would be thrilled to kill 120-inch 8-point buck if I knew it was at least 3.5 years old. I would think that that is an awesome, awesome trophy. And yet you'd go out to Iowa, you'd pass up 50 of those things. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You'd never even draw the bow, because that's not what you're out there for. You know, you wait 4 years to get enough points to get a non-resident tag. You're not going out there to shoot 120-inch deer. So right. you have it's to have a realistic expectation for where you are.
Yep, absolutely. And it's funny you brought up that I think it's called the five stages of a hunter. I felt myself slide back and forth on that scale so many times for years and years. I hear you, man. Especially since I do a lot of traveling, I hunt a lot of destinations. I typically do most of my hunting, 85% or better, public land and deal, you know, do it yourself, DIY. And so I don't go into it with the idea in my head. If I was going with an outfitter, if I'm going guided, I have a much higher expectation. And I think I lean more towards like being a trophy hunter or whatever. But if I'm going out there, I'm doing it myself. And I think, not that I lower my standards, it becomes about something different. It becomes about the experience. It becomes about me wanting to do it on my own, or me wanting to get my first of that type of species or whatever. It just becomes something different. I don't think there's very many people that start here and go to here and stay there. I think if you're a hunter, you're always evolving, and that scale is just slides back and forth all over the place. So, but I know you and I were playing around before we got on with some of the cool technology that we got going on with this app that I'm using. Do you want to take some time and kind of explain to the people that are tuning into this and let them see what kind of stuff that you're hunting and why it's not like hunting in the Midwest or hunting out west and stuff like that?
Yeah, sure. Let me see if we can call this up. You see the map here?
Yep, it's up.
Okay. So, I mean, this is an area that I hunt here in Pennsylvania. Okay. And I may zoom out just a hair because I want to show you. This is a farm. This is the farm where I hunt. Okay. Mm-hmm. And goes over to here. There's a creek that goes through here. This is like a bottom land here. There's a lot of does that bed down in here. Mm-hmm. It's kind of swampy. I don't know why. I don't see a lot of bucks down in there. Okay, this is the edge of the farm over here. Okay, this is a neighboring property. Okay, this up here is a neighboring property. This is a third neighboring property. This is the development that I talked to you about. You don't see a lot of big timber here, do you?
No.
I got a little chunk here. I got a little chunk here. I got a chunk here. And I can't control what's going on in any of these places around. I know that in this ravine here is good bedding for bucks. I also know, because I have friends on this side of the mountain, see this big mountain? Yeah. Look at this. Okay, that's big timber. Okay? That holds a lot of deer. And when they get pressured here, this is, why are they here, John? Come on, this is not a trick question. Why exactly? Food. That's why deer are here. This is the farmland, okay? There's not that much to eat up here once the acorns are cleaned up. There's really nothing, but there's sanctuary. I know for a fact that a lot of the bucks that we get here all during the summer and into almost the opening day of the season are going to spend a lot of the fall up here. And I know that there's some people up here that have some little food plots, and I know where those deer are. And they're if they're from here to here, okay, again, if I'm out hunting in the Midwest and you have several thousand acres to go, that's only a half a mile. But it might as well be to Mars and back, because I can't go over there.
Right.
So what's the point? So anything that I do over here, okay, anything that I do over here to screw up my hunting, or anything these neighbors do,
right,
to screw up the hunting, if they kick off the deer, what am I going to do? It's just done, you know, if those deer leave. So I have to be very, very judicious about how I'm going to do my hunts, right? Mm-hmm. You just can't run around willy-nilly. And there's spots that you don't like. I like to start out hunting. I don't know how other people like to do it. I like to start out the season hunting in the fields, literally in the fields. I've gotten to be more of a fan of ground blinds. I like to have stands right on the edge, mm-hmm. or I'm literally out in the field. I got a platform, a 6-foot platform with a trap door, and it's just made for like a hub style, you know, like a double bull blind.
Okay.
And I can put that platform on a trailer that I have, and I can drive it anywhere I want in the bean field and just stick it down there. And all I do is I either glass or I put a trail camera on a stake, and I find the areas. Because the thing is, you know, like the does, especially, I like to kill does early in the season. Some people don't like to do that. They don't want to mess with the does. Early season for me is a great time for a couple of reasons. Mm-hmm. A, there's a lot of does in the areas where I hunt, and B, those bucks are not coming out with those family groups of does and feeding in the same spots. So like, I'll get patterned early in the bow season, like certain mm-hmm. spots where 5 or 6 does will come out every night. And even though they come out of the woods in different areas from day to day, they always end up coming to the same exact patch. I don't know why. There's 200 acres of beans out there, but they always end up in like the same 30-yard circle where they have everything mowed down, you know, this high off the ground. So if you can just get your blind set in one of those spots, you just go and have almost a slam dunk doe kill. And then if you make a good shot, she's going to die out there in the open. And so I like to get into like through the first 3 weeks of bow season without even really even going into my timber, because I'm trying to save that. Like, you don't obviously want to be in there right at last light. That's when deer are probably going to be coming down, you know, out of the cover towards the field. So mm-hmm. I like to try and start out with like low pressure by trying to keep my hunting out into the more open areas where I can see what's going on. And then as the rut will come, I'll try to get more into the timber. The only good thing about all that fragmented landscape is that there are a lot of narrow sections of cover. So there's places where, you know, if the deer are going to come through a given area, they're probably going to hug that narrow strip of timber. And so you can set up in a lot of different pinch points in there where you know they like to come through. And then that's what I try to do during the rut, is to just get in those funnel areas and hope mm-hmm. that, you know, I either get a cruising buck, or like that encounter I told you about, if you're really lucky, you get a hot doe, you know, that's going to pull one with her right past you.
Right, right. Well, it's funny, is it, you show me that. That to me looks like paradise. Because at a farmland and stuff like that, there's food and stuff like that, and people automatically look at that and say, I mean, that's where my head went, and I know better. If you hunt in New York, especially when I hunt out on Long Island, you're gonna. As a matter of fact, I'm gonna share it with you. I'm gonna show it. Let's see if I can do this to you. See that?
I got to go back to the app.
Let's see.
Try it again.
Hold on a second here. Let's say start sharing. There we go. All right. You can see it?
Oh, yeah. This is the junkyard, right?
Yeah. So this is actually where Swamp Donkey got killed. And there's a big swamp right there. Little swamp right there. I mean, it's in a neighborhood. These are million-dollar houses in the Hamptons. And this is the kind of stuff that I hunt. This is where I made my bones, this is where I cut my teeth hunting, is this style of hunting. Every one of these is an acorn-producing tree, so there's no real rhyme or reason to food, hunting food supply. Obviously, some trees produce better than others, so on and so forth. But you can see it, and it's all interconnected. These deer can move anywhere they want without really coming out of cover. I mean, for miles and miles. And so it just becomes about figuring out how they use landscape. And you can't really see the topography in this, but swamps and stuff like that, hunting edges of swamps and using that type of philosophy of deer like to move as efficiently as possible always helps you put the pieces of the puzzle together. Obviously fresh water too. This is Long Island, by the way. Great. I just gave that away where my spot is. I'm gonna have to edit that one
Yeah,
out for sure.
good luck getting permission to hunt there.
So, but it's not about getting permission. So a lot of this stuff is public land. So yeah, this is private. These are private. These lots are private. Whatever is not, it's owned by the township and it's public. It's more or less getting permission to access the public land. You don't actually hunt on these people's property. It's just getting permission. So, getting somebody to say, okay, yeah, you can cross my property, then you're golden. So, but yeah, it's just I think it's all about overcoming the obstacles and thinking outside the box and just working what you got. Like you're doing, in PA right now, is you learn that don't make the same mistakes as your neighbors, or just making mistakes, period, is deer hunting mistakes, and trying to be as perfect as you can be and control what you can control, because you really can't control weather, you can't control wind, you can't control what's in the deer's head and what he wants to do at that time. So, it's putting the time in, paying attention to the details, and really giving yourself the best possible hand to play, so to speak, stacking the odds in your favor.
Well,
So.
and I think it, I know it works too, because by trying to keep the pressure as low as I can, realizing that I can't control what everyone else is doing, I know that in addition to that encounter that I had a trail camera picture of a really good deer that was out in the open one day during the season, and then another instance, I had at least several other times that I know good bucks were killable. You know what I mean? So that tells me that we're doing something right as far as deer are feeling comfortable there, at least enough to make a mistake every once in a while. So, and that's really what deer hunting's about, right? I mean, you got to be there on that time that that deer makes a mistake, whether that's in
Absolutely.
Iowa or Pennsylvania, because they don't let their guard down very often. So I know that it is possible, and you just I just can't judge my success or my worthiness as a deer hunter in Pennsylvania based on how many tags I fill. 'Cause if I do that, I'd go insane. You know what I mean? It's a different standard for me, and I'm voluntary. I almost never I only really hunt with a gun like one day a year. And that's just because on opening day of rifle season, my kids and my father-in-law and some other friends, we all like to just go out. And it's for me, opening day of rifle season is more about my kids and camaraderie than it really is about me having a great desire to shoot something with a gun. But my point is, by voluntarily, essentially restricting myself to bow hunting, and by voluntarily passing, on the younger bucks that I have opportunity to kill, several times, typically over the course of a season, I'm getting sort of what I deserve, if you will. It's a self-imposed sentence, but I just know, I truly believe, it's going to all come together one of these years, and that's going to be sweeter to me than, however many of numbers of deer that I could have killed in the meantime. Yeah, for sure.
Well, cool, man. That's all I got for you. Where can our listeners find out more about you? And obviously, you can find out a lot about Peterson. It's pretty easy, but.
Well, if absolutely want to check out our website at bowhuntingmag.com. If you don't have a subscription, I highly recommend getting yourself a Peterson's Bow Hunting Magazine. We happen to have the lovely Samantha Morgan on this month's cover. But if you go to bowhuntingmag.com, you can get a subscription for $8. Sign up online. You can find us on the newsstand, and you definitely want to follow us on social media. So check out Peterson's Bow Hunting on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram. Lots of different ways to connect with Peterson's Bow Hunting, and we're doing our best to feed good content out there on all those channels.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you got writers like me, so
Yeah, we got something coming up from you. I got a John Stallone story coming up this fall. Who do you now? Who do you root for? Are you a baseball fan?
No, I don't.
That's good, because you probably would have rooted for the Yankees or something.
You know what? I kind of, as a kid, I watched the Mets a little bit more than the Yankees, only because I had an uncle that was kind of connected and used to get tickets to it. So I went to several Mets games. I went to a Yankee game as well, but never got into baseball. I always liked football and basketball and a little bit of hockey too. So,
Who's
but
your football team?
I like the unfortunately like the Jets,
Ooh, that's tough.
but I do
That's
like
like the lowest form of fandom.
I know. Tell me about it. But I do root for the Cardinals and the Giants as well, believe it or not, because just growing up in a family with big Giants fans. So unless they're playing the Jets, I root for them,
Gotcha.
basically.
Well, I won't tell you that I'm a Patriots fan then, so.
Jeez.
How did I ever make the pod? I never would have been on today, would I? Had I told
Nah,
you that at the beginning.
you're all right. You're right. You know what? I actually got a lot of respect for Belichick, and I like Brady. I think he's a hell of a quarterback. He's probably one of the best quarterbacks ever lived. So, it's hard. People who hate because it's one thing to hate them because they're your rival, but to actually hate people because they're awesome is stupid. It's stuff that we see in this industry all the time, that people get crapped on because they're better than us. I hate that jealousy thing, so.
There's an expression that I like and quote often, which is, it ain't bragging if you done it. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I mean, sometimes I have to admit, I get rubbed the wrong way. I mean, I think there are a few people out there, not just in our industry, right? In any walk of life, there are some people who self-promote maybe a little too shamelessly. But the truth is, regardless of what you think about any of that, if somebody has done something legitimately, you can't take it away from them. You can't take it away from them, you
They'll
know?
try. They'll
No,
try, though. They
I
try all the
know.
time.
Haters gonna hate, right? Haters gonna hate. So, but I
Absolutely.
know how hard it is, and I'm certainly, I don't put myself on the level of a lot of people in our industry. And even now, even when you hunt good areas, you know this, John, it's not easy to kill 150-inch deer. I don't care if you're in Iowa. I'm not saying it's easy. There are a few times, like I did have a hunt in Iowa a couple of years ago. It was easy. But that was just luck. I mean, you can luck into being in the right place at the right time one day, like on the first day of a hunt and kill a monster. But for the most part, if it was easy, come on, everybody'd be
Not
killing one,
right.
right?
Yep.
Everyone would be doing it. So, and if it was easy, we wouldn't be selling any magazines, John. I wouldn't have to buy your articles.
True.
So thank God it's not easy, right, buddy?
Absolutely. Awesome, man. Well, thank you very much for coming on, and we'll talk soon, I'm sure. And, you know, hopefully you have a good hunting season. I expect to see some big things out of you.
Well, I just want to kill a pig here in the next couple of days. And then next week I'm going down to Texas and chasing javelina. So that's hopefully fun. we're going to have some fun here. And yeah, this fall, I'm excited. First week of September, I'll be in Kentucky chasing those big velvet giants. So
Kentucky's got some great deer.
I'm hoping to start off the season with a bang, but you just never know. You never know, John.
All right.
I'm just grateful for the opportunity to be with you and to just be able to do this kind of stuff for a living. So anything that I tag on top of it is gravy.
Absolutely. All right, man. Well, thank you very much. I'll talk to you soon.
Yep. You got it. Bye-bye.